This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, everybody. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes.
It's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Hey, Place to Be Nation, how are you? It's nice to talk to you, not from the car and from my home, sitting here at the PTVN Studios, because it is another edition of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Zarek, coming to you live here on this Monday evening, back in the saddle, riding hard along my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nations. Good to have you back, sir. Safe and sound from the French Quarter. Welcome to episode 486 of the longest, maybe not road trip longest, but longest episodic reigning motherfucking gold standard. Why don't we bring our third member in, because you are Thelma to his Louise.
Yeah, we
spent... I'm assuming Cowboy was Brad Pitt or whoever the guy was in that movie.
I think I'm Brad Pitt. But anyway, it was a good time.
I figured you'd say that. But no, it's not like you guys had a blast.
It was a blast. We listened to many podcasts, a lot of good music. We talked, played some games, listened to all 19 hours of the Breaking Balls podcast. We heard it all. And then, of course, the man that was in the back seat along with us, blowing us out every 40 minutes or so, is Mr. John D'Amato. Johnny, how are you?
It was amazing, guys. I want to go on record saying that I kept my flatulence to a one per state.
So you didn't do the trifecta every three exits?
I lived up to my bargain now. It was only one per state.
Well, that's because, like we said, you didn't want the windows down because it was cold. So you dealt with it.
So anyway, guys, last week on Main Event, Mr. Steve Willie was telling me about the wrestling portion of the fine weekend in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. I was looking forward to talking to you gentlemen about the social/Place to Be Nation aspect of the weekend. Of course, huge crowds all weekend, huh, guys? I don't think you had
fine
time.
It was social. Absolutely social. It was a great time. Honestly, I said this a few different places, but I'll reiterate it here for our listeners that wrestling or not, it was legitimately one of the best weekends of my life. That is how much fun I had. From the minute we got in the car in Rhode Island to the minute we returned back home, it was a lot of laughs, a lot of camaraderie, a lot of fun. It was nice meeting some brand new faces. Meeting the legendary Graham Cawthon was amazing. His hair is beautiful. His Nakamura jacket is even more beautiful. It was just a great time, honestly. We did a lot of different things. Hung out, like I said, with a lot of different people. I barely slept. I think I average about 2 hours a night. D'Amato probably not too much far behind me. And I'm still making up for it. I'm still paying for it. But it was well worth it. I do not have one regret from that trip. It was just a great time. It really was. The Superstore was fun. D'Amato and I successfully snuck into another WrestleCon, so that was a good time. Roger got pinched. Nice. No, Roger got pinched.
Thanks to the Boogeyman. The Boogeyman caused the diversion. Scared some kids. And, we rode on his coattails.
Of all guys, right?
Yeah.
And it was awesome watching Stacy get to meet all the divas of her dreams at WrestleCon. She was marking out in the line for Trish and Lita, and then she looked like she was on Cloud 9 as she walked away from that encounter. So she got to meet them all. She made Tori Wilson cry, I believe, by talking about her wrestling career. No one else probably ever has. So that was great. The Superstore was a lot of fun walking around there, just checking everything out. And what else did we do, D'Amato? We had some good lunch, ate some fried alligator. Was that what we had?
Yep, alligator tails, had some gumbo, jambalaya, some muffuletta, just about all the local cuisine except for the beignet. I stayed off the sugar horse, but otherwise we sampled a lot. Thanks to Double J's jambalaya. Was it great?
Jambalaya Jake, the man, Jacob Williams, showed up to the tailgate with his own homemade jambalaya, which was amazing. And the setup at, as I affectionately call it, as Cajuns, Cajuns, they set us up like in this alley, like that was like their patio. And So Nick Duke and myself, Todd Weber and Jennifer Smith went shopping on Saturday, and we loaded up on all the groceries. And so we roll in at like, I don't know, 9 a.m. and into Cajun's. And so Nick is thinking like, all right, he's going to be barbecuing on this like tiny grill, like the Christofi deal from New York. And yes, they're like, right. Oh, the grill is in the back. You can use ours. He pulls this thing out. It is like an industrial strength fucking massive like barbecuer thing. How long do you think it was, D'Amato? I mean, it was pretty lengthy, right?
Yeah, it was a good 3-4 feet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he has had a ton of sausages. We had what else? We have pork
rib tips. Yeah, rib
burgers, hot dogs.
Watch your Nick on the barbecue. So it's like Barbecue Masters, a reality show. He's definitely a master at his craft.
Excellent.
Oh, it's quite a special sight. And 2 years in a row, guys. I don't know how you did it, but the most offbeat, not ideal places. And you guys made chicken salad at a chicken you know what, because
I think chicken shit was the name of that dog. I think that was the name of the dog that was there.
Chicken shit. Off the beaten path places, but you guys made it work, and kudos. And and when we had a first, the two of the first ladies of PTBN made an appearance to break up the PTBN Sausage Fest, which was very delightful. So, yeah.
It was a literal sausage fest. When you looked at the grill, it was a literal sausage fest. but no, it was great.
You know, it's funny because, it was funny because the picture that you guys took in this alley that I saw, and I'm like, this was where the fuck were you? I thought you guys got like thrown out or something. You're like stuck in this like fucking dank area, but I'm like, because it seems so tiny, but it seemed relatively quaint, and
the back part of a bar, where, you know, you go to smoke and catch some air. It's like that. There's the back part.
It's like if you were to have anal with a bar, that's where you would be, right there.
and to me, the highlight of the weekend was watching good old Sheriff Pete Shermack load up a barbecue tray, barbecue plate, with precision. Expert precision. He just gets one of everything and then loads it up in record time.
I can only imagine.
He should be in a reality show competition. To load up a plate.
We get to relive WrestleMania 3 with Bundy and Lil Beaver, so that was fun.
Son of a bitch! Damn it! Where was the fucking video for that?
It's in our minds.
Oh man,
it's in our minds.
Damn it!
A lot of great karaoke. We haunted the Cat's Meow all three nights, which was an epic time. We pretty much owned that place. And, you know, Eric Clare was in the house as well. So it was just basically three nights of us co-opting every song being sung and singing Rusev Day as part of the lyrics, to the point where, like, one of the hostesses hated us, one liked us, and it was quite the scene. We made friends everywhere we went, for sure, and it was just an amazing time. WrestleMania, if it was there every year, I'd be fucking fine with that, because the setup is beautiful. Like, you just walk right out of the arena, and it, you know, what is it, maybe a mile at most, a mile and a half down to Bourbon Street, like into
Bourbon
the thick
Street,
of it. And you're just there. You're just there. You don't have to go anywhere. Nothing closes. You just walk around as long as you want. Everyone's just out on the streets. And it was cold.
That SWAT Zone MC on Friday night is like, oh, they're yelling wrestling stuff.
But, like, that's who's in your fucking
cool,
bar.
It was cool as to what was going on that weekend.
God. So definitely on Bourbon Street, there was a WrestleMania buzz.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I figured as much. I just was curious.
Everywhere. Yeah, everywhere you went. I mean, you get nods and high fives with the shirt you're wearing. A lot of Adam Cole, baby, just yelling everywhere. Like, just
and
everything.
There was also a WrestleMania buzzkill named fucking Simon Gotch.
Oh, God, the fucking Simon Gotch. I've never been more antsy to get away from a wrestler in my life than I was Simon Gotch. I was like, give me fucking Mike Eller. Like, I am done with Simon Gotch, you know? Fuck. Give me someone I want to talk to. He was just like, everywhere I turned was Simon fucking Gotch. I could not escape
mustache,
him.
That stupid mustache. Him and Rowley Fingers are the last two on Earth.
Do you want to tell him, haven't
got the hint that stupid mustache is outdated.
Do you want to tell him the story of how we met, though, with Simon Gotch? How you
course,
set me up?
Man, yes.
Go ahead. You want to do it or you want me to?
Yeah, hey, I'll do it. He walks in, and I'm all excited. I go, hey, Justin, Aiden English just walked in.
So, of course, I'm like fucking buzzed already, because I don't drink much these days, and I was already a few in. So I'm feeling good. We hadn't eaten yet. And so I'm like, I'm in the street, and D'Amato comes and grabs me. He's like, oh, Hayden English is here. So I'm like, oh, fuck. So I run up behind him, and I go, Rusev Day. And he turns and goes, oh, you're a fucking asshole. You know, he's like, don't be an asshole. And I'm like, oh, wait, you're not the guy? And I didn't realize it. Still, I'm talking to him, thinking it's still Hayden English because I'm out of it. And then I realized, like, after he leaves, that it was Simon Gotch. I'm like, that's why he called me an asshole. But he was definitely a little bit bitter, I think, about being – I mean, he was dropping jokes and – you know, left and right, like off-color jokes about people in WWE. So he definitely had a little bit of bitterness.
Oh, good. Oh, well. Which is why he's sitting there. Now, where was the bar? I know you were on the road. I don't think you guys were in yet. But what was the bar that Elias went into? Do you know that? Did anybody you run into go there that night? Or
I think he was at what was the name of that place, John? The place that we were going to go?
I think it was the Howlin' Wolf.
Was it there?
That's actually very well known, the Howlin' Wolf. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I wasn't sure. I forgot the name of it, but I was just curious if anybody you had run into had actually gone. I think it was Thursday night, right, that he strolled in.
Yeah.
I was curious what it was.
I thought it was that other place. Was it there, John? I thought it was that other – was that place we went to? We were going to meet Claire, and then we left because it started to rain.
Walk-ons? No, it wasn't walk-ons.
No, not walk-ons. The other place.
Yeah,
the one that was like mobs. Remember, we walked all the way there and then all the way back. Well, oh, you weren't with us. You weren't with us. That's right. You and Roger met us after. Yeah, it was that. Whatever that. I think it was that place actually that he might have been at. But anyway, I mean, and it's like you just walk down the street and you just run into people. Like you just like run into Claire. You know, wherever he was with his buddies, and it was just like
You ran into Coco.
The fucking highlight of my life. Got a picture of Coco Beware on the street. I think I completely caught him off guard. I'm like, go. I'm like, diehard fan. Yeah. And I was fucking, and then of course I met Sapphire in the arena for WrestleMania.
Yes. I saw that.
That was epic.
I saw that. You should have told him another drink and I'll have high energy.
Right. I was high on adrenaline the whole weekend.
I'm glad you had a good time. Glad you had a blast. It seemed like you had a good time.
Oh, it was
tremendous.
Awesome.
So the ride was The ride was incredible. Next year, the Four Horsemen of Norwalk have to represent next year.
No, next year. I've actually.
And the big broth bread is going to reunite. We're gonna replay the moment where you guys met and kissed the big broth bread.
And then forget that he was there for the next 5 hours.
I still don't believe that he was there.
Oh, God. Next year, let's just pray that the weather's not like it was today. That's all I ask for.
Oh, my God.
I might be retired.
Anyway, boys, I'm glad you had a blast. You guys get a lot of fun. A lot of fun. And tonight, I'm sure the streets of Hamilton, Ontario are just as buzzing as Burton.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously. But tonight we premiere, JR and Big John, a new pay-per-view because we obviously are entering a new year, big storyline. So this evening we premiere the 1988 Royal Rumble. And there's a story behind this show, which JR will get into in a moment. The date was January 24th, 1988, from the Cops Coliseum in Hamilton, Ontario. And now I found out today, which I didn't know at first, thanks to JR's sexy-haired friend, Graham Cawthon of the History of WWE.com, that there actually was another show that night. Now, I'm not going to pretend. Next time we have Kelly on, I'll ask JR. I'm not going to pretend I know how far or close these two cities are. But the other show was at the Forum in Halifax, Nova Scotia. So I don't know how far Halifax and Hamilton are. We'll ask Kelly next time he's on. But here was your card. Sensational Sherry successfully defended her women's title against Rockin' Robin. The guy that you met in the street randomly, JR, Coco Beware, defeated Sika, who was probably somewhere in the street.
I'm sorry. We also saw who's that, Afa in the street, John? We didn't talk to him, but.
Seriously? Yeah, I just mentioned Sika and you just happened to find Afa?
Yeah, Afa was there
definitely
too.
Afa, the whole crew was there. He was with the whole family, man.
They're probably stewing about Roman Reigns already.
I know. The Rougeaus defeated the Conquistadors. Demolition wrestled separately. Axe defeated Buddy Lane. And Smash defeated Ken Patera. Brutus Beefcake once again defeated Greg Valentine. And the main event, the Honky Tonk Man defeated the Macho Man Randy Savage by disqualification.
All right, so I looked it up because we don't have to wait for Kelly. We have this thing called Google Maps. So Hamilton, Ontario to Halifax Regional Municipality in Nova Scotia. It's just like 8/10 of a road trip in the car with the cowboy. It's 18-hour drive, two-hour flight though, only 2-hour flight. You can drive across the Trans-Canada Highway if you want to drive there.
Okay, so they weren't that far. couple hours. Okay. So that's where they were. Because I remember at the time, everyone was like perplexed. Why isn't Savage on this show? Well, I guess that's why. I have a theory about that too, but we'll get to that at the end of the show. Speaking of JR, why did Mr. Vincent Kennedy McMahon come up with this fine program?
Because he wanted to. After the Thanksgiving 1987 pay-per-view showdown between Jim Crockett Promotions and the WWF, cable companies told Promotions not to try that nonsense again, so Crockett believed it would be safe to enter the pay-per-view waters with the Bunkhouse Stampede, January 1988. Show was set to run in Vince's home territory in Uniondale, New York, while Vince had an encounter with a competing pay-per-view with the help of Pat Patterson created a new concept and aired it at the same time as Crockett's event for free on the USA Network. Crockett's event had a weak card and was confusion regarding the time of the event, as tickets were printed with three different times on them. The pay-per-view was announced for 6 and the actual time was for 7. With Vince's free Royal Rumble going head-to-head, the audience was split yet again, and the Stampede was a failure. Jim Crockett Promotions would later be sold to Ted Turner, summer of 88, but we have one more showdown between these two coming up soon. John, any memory of Bunkhouse Stampede locally for you?
There wasn't much buzz. No, it was just mostly what I dug up from the Observer stuff. But as far as locally, there really wasn't much buzz for the NWA at the time. So it was quite a surprise. But I think they only had like a half a house. So
lame.
Yeah, the show was too.
Yeah, Dusty's win at the end went over like a fart in church. Yeah.
Over like a fart in the backseat of the Yukon. The fuck we had.
Yeah, it was a little ill-advised to go into Long Island. Wasn't exactly starving for NWA action at that time, so no, it was a little ill-advised.
It was on TV, obviously, right, John? It was on TBS, so obviously.
No, it was a pay-per-view. No.
What I'm saying is, we obviously had TBS.
Definitely, Saturday night, sure.
Okay, so, but I mean, yeah. It's not the same as a show at, a WWF show at NASA. I agree with you on that 100%. JR, any other notes?
Yeah, we got some notes here from Mr. Greeny putting work in on the 1988 episode of Superstars of Wrestling. Craig DeGeorge conducted an interview with Ted DiBiase and Virgil, which DiBiase had Andre the Giant and Bobby Heenan come out, announced he had purchased Andre's contract from Bobby Heenan using that hard-earned money, and said that Andre would deliver the world title to DiBiase after Andre defeats Hulk Hogan. After a match with the Islanders, Jack Tunney announced that they would be suspended indefinitely until Matilda the Bulldog was found. Of course, rumors abound that they had dog-napped her. The next week, after a match featuring the British Bulldogs, Bobby Heenan showed up on the interview stage and said the Islanders had been reinstated and the Bulldogs should go backstage to talk to Jack Tunney and find out where Matilda is. Also here, Gorilla Monsoon is actually set to be part of the commentary team tonight, but was sidelined after suffering a mild heart attack. So we do get Vince McMahon, and we'll hear a little bit more of him as well in next week or our next episode too. Also, finally, less known is that the first experimental Royal Rumble match was not tonight. It happened on October 4th, 1987 in St. Louis at a house show. The one-man gang won the match, eliminating the Junkyard Dog. So a little bit of a tease there for fans local to St. Louis, and then we get the official televised version here. That be it.
There we go. All right. Why don't we dive in? We, again, are announcers. Vincent, our Saturday Night's Main Event announcers on this evening. Vincent Kennedy McMahon and Jesse the Body Ventura. Almost felt like a pay-per-view, so it was a good – they had a weird – on the network, they must have been overdubbing something because watching it today, there were like two themes playing at the same time in the beginning. So it was very strange. I wasn't sure what they were.
Rudes is definitely dubbed in. They have that fake – dent.
But it was something under it. It was awful. Anyway, JR, speaking of the ravishing one, let's dive into our opener.
Speaking of anal, Jesse Ventura and Rick Rude. He's very into him. Ricky yes. Steamboat taking on the ravishing one, Rick Rude. Good opener on paper, but we'll see. Steamboat's due for a new feud, and Rude keeps his momentum rolling with Orndorff now gone. Steamboat gets a warm reaction as Jesse reminds us that Rude won the body award at the Slammies. Rude is solo tonight, but as confident as always, and we get a lockup to start. Rude lands some forearms out of it. Steamer chops back into it, and the two trade blows from there until Rude charges wildly and gets dumped to the floor. Rude returns and tries for a test of strength as Jesse's gushing over his arms. Rude wins the test, but Steamer flips into an armbar, works the arm for a while, keeping Rude in trouble and under control. Steamer unloads some chops between the arm work. Rude goes to the eyes and hammers away, as Vince says all he's done is punch so far. Steamer tries to mount a comeback, but Rude punches through it until Ricky ducks a charge and goes back to the armbar yet again. Rude breaks free, slugs Steamboat down, but then struggles while posing due to the arm being dinged up. I like that touch there. Rude just keeps punching away, but Steamboat answers with chops until Rude catches him with a knee to the gut, sending him to the floor. Rude slams Steamer on the floor, gyrates back inside, showing those hips off. Steamboat returns, but Rude goes right into a seated chinlock, holds on to that for a while, till Steamer breaks it, showing his great stamina, standing up and dropping back with an electric chair. However, Steamer eats knees on a splash. Rude follows with an atomic drop for two. Steamer battles back and slams Rude to the corner and follows with a chop to the head for two. They traded some pin attempts, with neither able to finish before going through a flurry of offense that really had the crowd hooked in. Steamboat goes up top, and Rude yanks the ref into his path and wipes him out by accident. With the ref down, Rude hoists Steamer up into his backbreaker, and the ref recovers and calls for the bell. And we get Rude's theme and the booze until the ref clarifies it was actually a DQ win for the Dragon. This was solid and nothing more. Rude's offense still just punches and chinlocks at least of some long, sluggish stretches. Steamboat looked great as always, both on offense and selling. And I think this could have been better with a hotter heat segment. As is, it's fine. Protects Rude a bit. I went 2.5, Scott, and I'm still not super impressed with Rude. Like, I'm waiting for the breakout. It hasn't happened yet. We'll continue to monitor. But to me, this was Steamboat really carrying him through this match.
Yeah, I actually gave this 3 stars. I liked it. I do agree with you that that Rude still is kind of sowing his singles oats. You know, we talked about this in the last couple of times that Rude's wrestled singles. You know, he's been mostly in tags most of his career to this point. Obviously, he was with Manny Fernandez, and he was tagging in World Class. He was the Texas heavyweight champion, so he did have to show a little bit of singles work. However, in World Class, wrestling a lot of those guys, Von Erichs and, you know, Iceman Parsons and guys like that, people in World Class don't give a crap about whether the match is boring or not. They just want to see the baby faces win. But in the WWF, you obviously have a different kind of cerebral fan base who could go for a little bit more than just, you know, rolling around. So I do agree that Rude needs to kind of settle himself in and come up with, you know, because you got to dictate the heels call the shots in the WWF. You know, in some other promotions, it's more back and forth. But you got to dictate in WWF, and Rude is not
at all.
Yeah, no, he's absolutely not doing it yet. But I still like the match. I thought Steamboat was Steamboat, and I think he carried it enough for me to make it 3 stars. I thought the Phantom ending was kind of cool, and it does protect Rude a little bit. Crowd was hot, and they'd be hot throughout, so kudos to the Canadian crowd for that. Better than the match we saw at the Garden, that draw. I thought Steamboat, I'm not going to say Steamboat dogged the match. I won't say that, but, I feel like Steamboat put a little more effort into, making Rude look better than he did at the Garden. Maybe it was because that was a draw in that match. Although the lengths weren't as, that was a 20-minute draw, and this match was 17.5. So it wasn't that big a difference, but it felt like that Steamboat put a little more effort into making the match look better than he did at the Garden in, I think it was, right, it was December. So that's why I think this match is slightly better. I'm trying to look up and see what I gave that match. I gave that what did I give that match? Let's see. Romulidi. What was it? Right, it was the last one of 87, right? Well, I'll look while John's giving his comments. But 3 stars, I thought it was fine. But
we both went 2.5.
Okay, yeah. So this match was definitely a little bit better than that one. But clearly, John, it's evident that Rude is just not quite at the WWF heel level because, again, in a lot of other promotions, the heels don't have to dictate as much as they like more back and forths in some of these territories. But here, the heel needs to kind of set the pace, and he's not doing it right yet.
Yeah, just to reiterate what you guys have been saying his past few matches, maybe he's a little starstruck and being deferential to the veterans. But he's definitely a lot of selling and punches, and that 5-minute chin lock in the middle of every match is a killer as far as star ratings. But you can understand because especially in this situation, they probably needed to go to a commercial break. So because this was on USA, and also what do you guys feel? I think Vince is a step down from Gorilla. I really like Gorilla. On these, I guess if you want to call it a pay-per-view, but I think Vince is perfect for the Cindy's and Saturday Night's main event, and this is a Gorilla event, so I really missed Gorilla here, especially at the end when Vince was playing dumb and he was like, "Oh, Rude, looks like Rude's got the victory with the submission," and when he knew that it was either a disqualification or there was something going on,
yeah, and
Vince was playing dumb. Yeah.
I love Vince, but I think at this point, he was really well suited for the Science Main Event. I think he's still kind of in that mindset where you pretty much said it, John, like he's over explaining everything, right? Because like he's used to that quick, fast paced 90 minutes. And I mean, he was doing TV probably at this point too, right? But I don't know. This just feels a little bit different. Like he hadn't really done a longer show. But on the flip side, it's on TV. It's a primetime thing. So maybe they figured, you know, we got to go kind of dumbish again too to anyone new tuning in like a Science Man event. But no, Gorilla was definitely missed. Like I think him and Jesse had the chemistry down for these long shows.
Yeah.
But
on
the other hand, Jesse really stepped up his game, man. Jesse was on fire here.
Yeah, there were a couple good lines I remember later in matches, in later moments of the show that Jesse was great. There's no doubt, like, Vince is good. You hit the nail on the head, JR. Vince is good in quick spurts. Mm-hmm. 4-minute matches, 5-minute matches. Trying to, like, tell the story of a 17-minute match is not Vince's strength. Not at all. Because he plays too dumb. Like, a lot of times, you know, as we'll see later on in the next couple of years, you know, Jesse definitely catches Gorilla in his over babyface moment, but it's not that often. Usually it's just Hogan with Gorilla, but Vince like just always looks like a moron every single time. And when you're dealing with 18 minute matches, it doesn't work. So I agree with you, John. Gorilla definitely would have fit better in this show, but obviously he was sick. He had the heart attack, so he wasn't there, which is a bummer because we'll see Vince next week for the first time in another building in quite a while. But yeah, I agree. I think Gorilla would have been better suited for these long windowed stretches. I mean, obviously there's two events on this show that are not matches that fit Vince, but the matches were definitely, I think I don't say he was over his head, but he was definitely still in that, like you said, JR, that like car salesman-y mindset that Saturday Night's Main Event is, where he's got to sell. But it's okay to do that in 5-minute spurts. It's another thing to try to do it over 18 minutes. But yeah, so there you go. So Rick Rude gets the gets protected, but Ricky Steamboat gets the victory.
Indeed. All right, so Indeed. We roll on. Mean Gene and Jesse Ventura on the podium, and they bring out Dino Bravo and Frenchie Martin. Dino Bravo is going to attempt to break the bench press record here tonight. Frenchie's going to proceed to stand there like an asshole. Jesse explains his role as spotter, reviews the current record of 705 pounds. Bravo's confident he can do it. Frenchie babbles on in French like a dick. Dino preps and powders up and then demands total silence as he warms up with 415 pounds as Jesse's just narrating the process. Just, I mean, he's just like gushing, spewing all over the place at this point. He's so friggin' worked up. Dino then puts up 505, 555. 595, 655, and then after some stalling and dicking around, we get the official record attempt is 715 pounds, which Jesse says will have to be confirmed later when the bar itself gets weighed. I don't know why they don't weigh it before. Bravo finally gets on the bench and he pulls it off, but there was a slight apparent assist from that spotter, Jesse Ventura, which Vince calls out immediately. And, you know, I thought this was fine character development for Dino, who kind of needs a hook now as a solo act. But this thing was way too long. Like, we didn't need him, you know, marching around the fucking podium between every attempt. Like, that was too much. I'm good never looking at Frenchie Martin, let alone having to hear him with that stupid fucking slicker coat he has on. I just want to choke him with it.
The painter coat.
Oh, God. If I saw him in the fucking Frenchie quarter, I would have knocked him on his ass.
The Frenchie quarter.
Broken his fucking shoulder again. But yeah, so, I mean, again, fine for Dino, whatever. It's better than having to watch him wrestle. That's fine. And but again, just ate up way too much time. It just took way too long. So what did you think of this, John?
Oh, it was horrendous. But Jesse did his best to try to save it. But it was at one point, Bravo, he's asking the crowd for silence. And guess what? He got his wish. they're pretty much too tired to even boo him. that's the ultimate insult, as you see. And fucking Frenchie. Sacre bleu, where's me mama? And all that crap.
Mufaletta.
But yeah, Jesse busted his ass, though, to salvage, barely salvage.
Jesse was busting something up there. Now, I don't know if it was that.
Yeah, right?
Fuck.
Oh, God.
All over Dino's chest.
It was a time filler, yeah.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. I totally forgot how long the show was, and then when I saw the timeline thing on the network today, I'm like, oh my God, this thing's almost 2.5 hours. Really? I don't remember ever being that long.
An hour and 40 minutes of which was Dino Bravo walking around that podium.
Yeah, and Gene, too. We got to give credit. Gene tried to save it, too.
Yeah.
So with Jesse and Gene, they at least made it something. I don't know what, but they made it something.
Yeah, but I guess it was time for Dino. Obviously, with the Dream Team done, needed to give Dino Bravo something heelish to hook on, you know, for his to enhance his character. So I guess that was it. It didn't need to be fucking 18 minutes worth, but
yeah, it's giving him something, right? Coming off the Dream Team, and like he needs some kind of hook. Was he? I feel like they didn't talk about it much. Was he Canadian Strongman and World's Strongest Man and all that shit when he was in the Dream Team? I think it was like the Canadian Champion or whatever, but.
They definitely souped up some Canada stuff, sure.
But how about like the World's Strongest Man part? I mean, like the Canadian Strongman. Like, was he that focused on? I don't remember. Was this kind of the
same? Yeah, I don't know about World's Strongest, but just more like Canadian Strongman until this.
Well, very rough, very rough. But the show spikes immensely with our next match here.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to our WWF Women's Tag Team Title match. Women's Tag Team Titles basically created for this feud. The Glamour Girls won them in a fictitious tournament in Egypt and make a big defense here against the Darlings of the Division after the Glamour Girls. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. But all right, here we go. And that is against the Jumping Bomb Angels. The Women's Tag Team Title feud rolls on. These two teams matched up with the gold on the line. Best of three falls. The Glamour Girls and Jimmy Hart have sweet matching gold jackets and get some good heat from the crowd. Jumping Bomb Angels get a hot pop as they jog out, looking great as always. Jesse picks the champs to win, and then Vince trolls him about Dino Bravo and says he helped him break the record, which Jesse denies. Jumping Bomb Angels attack at the bell, and Kai quickly turns things around and batters to Tano. Glamour Girls start to tag off, but Martin snags a two count with a slam. Yamazaki gets a tag, and she gets a two off a butterfly suplex, and Jesse just straight up asks Vince the names of the Jumping Bomb Angels. And Vince doesn't know because he doesn't speak Japanese, so we're off to a real good start. Jesse says he may want to ask one of them out for a date after the match. He should know their names. And Vince starts calling them Pink and Red. So, I mean, just a fucking mess right here. The back and forth continues as the Bomb Angels pretty much control the action with their usual crisp, high-octane offense. Kai stooges around. The Jumping Bomb Angels nab near falls, followed by Yamazaki going to an octopus hold. Things break down, and we get a double figure four by the Angels. And Tatano ends up back in, works over Martin with an Indian deathlock, when then she turns into a nice submission hold. Vince still has no clue on the names as Yamazaki comes in, picks off the left leg of Martin as well, preventing her from making the tag. Yamazaki comes in empty on a dropkick off the middle rope, and Judy stomps away. She starts to get vicious as Vince says she's the largest woman in the ring, and Jesse says asks if it's okay to say that. Judy pancakes Yamazaki out of a powerbomb position and grabs the first fall for the champs. After a break, the champs keep control using strikes and slams to keep the Angels at bay. Yamazaki dodges a splash and tags Tatano, who levels Kai with a clothesline off the middle rope for two. Vince is now calling them by name, but is still butchering them. Jesse thinks Noreno sounds Italian, which is not even her name. It's a fucking mess. They all end up in the ring, and Glamour Girls clothesline each other, but Kai uses her power to slug down Tatano. Tatano comes back and gets a sunset flip for the second fall. So we're all dead even, knotted up. And the third fall started with the Kai bullying Yamazaki, but Yamazaki turns the tide when Martin comes in, catching her with an enziguri. Tatano tags in, tries a cradle suplex. Martin blocks it with a knee. Tatano dodges a charge, gets a sunset flip for two. Martin goes back to control, and that continues for a bit with the Glamour Girls showing off some nice power offense with some strikes and getting some near falls. Martin grabs Yamazaki as she enters and whips her to the corner where Kai chokes away. Yamazaki eventually blocks an axe blow and punches away and then hoists Kai up and drops her hard on her ass for two. Martin tags in, as does Tatano, who comes in with a knee drop off the top for two. Tatano gets two off a suplex to a bridge and then tags Yamazaki, as they're really just putting a beating on Martin, who's hanging tough as always. Yamazaki comes up empty on a Suntown Splash off the middle rope. She trips Martin up and tags Tatano with a clothesline off the middle rope for two. With the ref tied up with Kai, the Jumping Bombs both hit the top rope and land a double dropkick for the win, and just massive pop. A really cool moment. The match was solid. I didn't think it was the best effort after watching that MSG match. I think that one was better than this, but it was still a great national TV showcase with a good flow, a lot of offense. These four have such good chemistry, and just God bless the Glamour Girls for hanging in there and the Jump on Mom Angels. And the Glamour Girls really made them look like stars. You know, Scott, we joked around in the past, in the previous iterations of this timeline, about, you know, calling them the Golden Girls and everything else. But rewatching them throughout the past couple of years and their work here, like, I mean, they make the Jumping Mom Angels. They hang every step of the way and just make them look amazing. And it's too bad because you know, everything's really gaining momentum, and the division pretty much dies here now from a tag perspective. Like, I don't know if we see them again at MSG, but they're pretty much gone. We don't see them again on TV or pay-per-view, and the women's titles just kind of vanish. So, a lot going on there. I really dug this match. I thought it was a lot of fun, and it's sad to see the tag division kind of go kaplunk from here. So, what did you think, Scott? I went, did I say what I went? I went three stars.
You went three.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went 3 stars too. It's a notch below the match they had at the Garden back in November, which was really, really good. We definitely trash Judy and Kai, but they definitely hung. You got to, I mean, it always takes two to tango, whether it's singles, tag, whatever. And you're not going to have a great tag match if one tag team's really good and the other team is shit. We've seen that. I think we've seen that more than enough. Pay-per-views, MSG, everywhere. So to Dorito and Nacho or whatever the fuck Vincent and Jesse were calling them, they're exceptional workers, but you got to have somebody to work with. And to their credit, you know, Judy and Leilani went move for move with them and sold for them and bumped for them like crazy. And to the Angels' credit, they knew how to bump for the offense that they were being given. So it was great chemistry, and it is a shame because, as you can see, the singles division is shit when you got fucking talentless Rock and Robin getting title shots. This is really what's keeping it afloat because, I mean, I know we talked about it way back at the end of 85 when the whole Wendy Richter Spider Lady thing happened. We weren't sure if the women's division was going to survive, and it's kept its head above water here and there. But here is where it sadly we really see it kind of sink. But if you're going to go out, you're going to go out strong. And we saw a great match at the Garden in November and a great match here. So it's a shame, John, that you know nothing comes of this and you can't find other good teams to put together to battle the Angels and keep this kind of thing going. I don't know if Vince meant for this to be long term anyway or what happened. But you wonder what could have been if Vince actually stuck with it and mm-hmm. beefed it up a little bit.
Yeah, at this stage, they still weren't confident in the women and the – and they kind of just gave up on it. But Leilani and Judy, I think they really stepped their game up when they're in there with the mm-hmm. with the Angels, as opposed to like being in matches with Donna Cristianello and what's what was Scott's prompted again? What was that one?
Dawn Marie.
Dawn Marie. Oh, God, yeah. they got lazy when they're with them. But when they see the Bomb Angels, they're like, oh, we really got to step our game up. And these are hidden gems because, like you guys said, you know, Judy, they get shit on because, you know, they're wearing their old bathing suits and stuff. But they really stepped it up. And every time there was a lull, Jimmy Hart is there to kind of distract and add a little juice to it. And just Jesse and Vince were just hilarious. And Jesse just kept riding them about the names, Vince, saying, you know, what do you mean? Just pronounce the names. And Vince is like, oh, the Pink Angel and the Red Angel.
Awful.
And then finally says, Nozino. And Jesse's like, oh, that sounds Italian. it's just a shit show. And then at one time, Jesse says, oh, the Glamour Girls got the weight advantage. But don't tell them I said that.
So awful. So bad.
So the so these teams literally, like, they fought almost like 50 times against each other only all throughout this year. So from here till June, wow. They're all over the country. We don't see them again for us, Scott, at MSG or on pay-per-view or anything. But they go all around the horn, and they don't fight anyone else. It's the two teams fighting from now till June for the titles. And then in Omiya, Japan, on June 8th, the Glamour Girls won the titles back via countout, 1904. And then that's it for both teams. We don't see them again. According to Wikipedia, the titles were officially vacated February 14th, abandoned in 89, it says. Judy Martin we'll see again. She sticks around a little bit. Kai we don't see again for a while. And the Angels go back. And from what I recall, when we did this with Jeff Learns Wrestling, I think they pretty much just retire. Like I think they're done. They don't go back to like Japan or anything. And they were young. I mean, they were pretty young. So, yeah, they're pretty much done not too long after this.
Yeah, such a shame. Born too early.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Tatano's only 52 now.
Wow. So they were in their – wow, they were 20s, only in their 20, barely in their early 20s.
Early
20s,
yeah.
Yeah, so Yamazaki is – she's 52. They're both 52, so.
Wow, so that – and that had to – so, I mean, this – we're almost a year – 30 years to the month. I mean, we're a few months past, but mm-hmm. so they were barely, you know, drinking age, 22 years old. That's crazy. So there they go. Jimmy Bomb Angels, your women's tag team.
So it looks like Tatano actually wrestled for a long time from 92 to 2010 in Ladies Legend Pro Wrestling, whatever that is. So she wrestles. It looks like Yamazaki retired pretty early. She actually owns a sushi place in New York City right now. So there you go.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, Johnny, we got to go find it.
It's called Go.
we gotta go find it. I'd like the Judy Martin roll, please.
Not a sushi fan, man.
The glamour roll. Oh, I like sushi. All right, JR, it's time for the – I know we have a little video package here, but it's pretty much time now for the reason this show is happening in the first place.
I guess so. That sushi's expensive. All right, so here we go. Vince McMahon, Jason Ventura, take us back to WrestleMania 3. Talk to us about Ted DiBiase's recent declaration that he would buy the WWF title, as well as Hulk refusing to do so. Vince then says Andre has paid off to get involved in Hogan's match at Sonya's main event. We see clips of that. And finally, we see Andre promising to deliver the WWF title to Ted DiBiase. So that kind of sets up the tone for our next segment. And now I'm thinking, Scott, I just want to see a Knights of Columbus sushi dinner. I think that's next on the docket.
I'll do it. I will plan it.
You can see Armento with the big hat on behind the counter rolling the sushi roll.
He would be the one with the hat to make sure that nothing would fall in anyway. But
scraps are up there. all right. So that does bring us to our big contract signing. We go back to the ring with Ted DiBiase, Andre the Giant, and Virgil march out for the big February 5th match contract signing. Mean Gene and Jack Tunney preside over it as well. Hogan marches out in this tight-ass outfit. These fucking ridiculous pants and shirt. He's just popping through. He comes out to a monster pop, just monster pop. After some posturing, Hogan sits at this cheap little fucking table that they dragged out. They couldn't find anything solid. Oh, it was awful. So he sits at the table. Gene is just pleading with Andre to sit as well. Andre confers with DiBiase and then slowly sits down as Jesse talks about how much Heenan made on the deal. It's clearing the cash left and right. Hood rich. DiBiase berates Hogan, demanding that he sign and is clowning on him for not accepting the deal that he offered him. Andre peruses the contract while glaring at Tunney and Gene, who just keeps rambling. DiBiase screams at Gene as Andre is still reading. Andre finally signs, and Ted tells him to put his stamp on approval. Both men stamp of approval on it. Both men stand and stare at it as Andre then slams Hogan's table head into the table and flips it over on him. Vince calls the table solid oak, which is about as far as the stretch as you can fucking get. Andre walks off as DiBiase rants and raves about what's to come. Just a red hot segment that sets the stage for the main event in a couple weeks away on February 5th. Just everyone is going crazy here, seeing these two guys in the ring again, getting hyped for a big rematch in WrestleMania, and that giant oak table busted over Hulk Hogan.
That shitty furniture. It reminds you like when you go to see your kid's teacher at preschool and you sit down on the little chair.
Right, pretty much. Fucking so this bad. Little shit IKEA table. Oh, solid oak.
Poor Andre, that little chair looked like it was going to bust. He should have brought that special chair that his mom made him in France.
Yes. No wonder it took him 10 minutes to want to sit down. I wouldn't have wanted to sit on that either. He might as well sat on the ground. Oh, wow. But. So there we go. Red hot. And I was saying this to you guys. Obviously, John, go right ahead. But just quickly, one question. Seeing this segment, the layoff makes it so much more, such a bigger, more deal now that Andre hasn't been around since March. It makes this just so huge, right? Like, it actually worked to WWF's advantage that he wasn't around all year.
Oh, for sure.
You know? What do you think, John?
Yeah, he was breaking down, so they had to conserve his bullets. He only had a few bolts to fire, and they had to conserve him. But I mean, DiBiase and Andre carried this segment. They're there with Jack Tunney, who sucks the life out the building, and friggin' Hulk. Just Hulk shows his shitty acting with just one range of motion, like he's puffing his cheeks turning all red and all that steaming rage, just like shitty acting, like when he was grabbing the guy in No Holds Barred and made him shit his pants. It's like Dookie, he just makes that stupid face. Such a horrible actor, man. Yeah. You just have more appreciation for Andre and Ted, the way they carried the entertainment here.
What the hell were those pants he was wearing? It was like the oddest looking pants.
Oh, they're ridiculous.
Where did he get dressed tonight? I mean, Jesus.
The whole outfit is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
They look like a pair of D'Amato jeans, those pants.
Only with some orange sneaks, we would have been all set.
Right?
Yeah. Without the muscles, yeah.
So we're all set, gentlemen. Friday night, February 5th, Market Square Arena in Indianapolis, the main event. And we will have that in a couple weeks. Big show, big show. All right, why don't we take a break? Definitely worth it on USA Network, JR.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely worth it, you know. You know, you get to see Hogan, Andre. I mean, it was a good – it was almost like a cable version. Now that I'm thinking about it, maybe Vince was – as much as that, having Vince do a 17-minute match is a lot. Probably smart to have Vince – because this is pretty much a cable version of Saturday Night's Main Event, just really long. So
yeah, I mean, I think Gorilla would have been fine, too. I mean, I don't think they did Vince because of that. Obviously, it's because of the heart attack. So.
Right.
But no, I mean, either way is fine.
Yeah. What do you think so far, John? Lives up to the standards?
Oh, definitely. They got this huge match coming up, and they're making no bones about it that they're going to be hyping this this huge match on primetime, which is epic. And also, as a bonus, you get this this experimental Royal Rumble that's never been seen before. So
that's right.
Yeah, they're hitting everything on the head here.
No, absolutely. When we return, we will give you that experimental Battle Royal-ish match and then one other match as well. But first, let us breathe in the air of the Golden Girls, the Golden Glamour Sushi Girls, because...
Want some sushi?
Have you ever made love on a couch? Well, I'm asking this. Have you ever made love on the back seat of a car? I remember one time I made love on the back seat of a car, and the police came and shined his light on me, and I said, I'm stroking. That's what I'm doing. I be stroking. I stroke it to the east, and I stroke it to the west.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is legendary ring announcer and WWE Hall of Famer, the Think, Howard Finkel. And you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
All right, Nation, we're back talking Royal Rumble 1988. Myself, Mr. Scott Criscolo, Mr. John Arsenio D'Amato. And of course, that theme you hear underneath us, you're thinking, well, that's not really a song released in 1988. But it was a theme song for a very popular TV show. And of course, that is because tonight in the Pop Culture Corner, we're going to look at the TV lineup from this evening here of the Royal Rumble. And the song you hear underneath us is Love and Marriage, of course, the theme for Married with Children, the iconic Al Bundy sitting on the couch with nowhere to go and nothing to do, hand in his pants, didn't want to go to work, just wanted to sit home, watch TV, let Peg run amok, and Bud and Kelly and Oliver, was that the kid's name that came in at the end? That was a Brady Bunch. Who was the kid that came in at the end? That was like an homage to the Brady Bunch in a way, wasn't it?
Who's the kid that came in at the end on Married with Children?
Seven. Speaking of couches. It was seven.
Yeah. Seven. My name's Seven.
Yes, it was. That's right. Marcy Darcy, Jefferson Darcy, all the hits. Great show, legendary show on Fox, all-time classic. And, of course, Ed O'Neill was fantastic as the couch-ridden Al Bundy.
And the King Kong Bundy made
a
special guest.
Yes, JR, because we are doing the... we're doing the MSG House Show, which is the next night. We'll save the Billboard list for that show next week. So here was on the four networks, because last time we did the TV, we didn't have a Fox. So here we go. On ABC on this evening was The Wonderful World of Disney at 7, and that went 2 hours. And then at 9 o'clock, the Sunday night movie, A Father's Revenge.
Ooh.
You don't have to look it up.
I'm fine not looking that up.
On CBS, we had 60 Minutes, of course. And then, of course, JR, what was on at 8 o'clock? It was all over our work building for many, many, many years.
Murder, She Wrote.
Murder, She Wrote. There you go. And then the CBS Sunday night movie, Body of Evidence. On NBC, Our House at 7, Family Ties at 8. And then the movie of the night, The Murder of Mary Fagan, Part 1 of 2.
Oh, God. Is that Donald Fagan's wife?
Yes. She accrued all the Yacht Rock royalties.
Yes.
What a beautiful world.
On Fox on this night, listen to this. Well, Married with Children was on at 8:30, but here was what was on before that. At 7 o'clock was 21 Jump Street with, of course, the then unknown Johnny Depp. And wasn't that Jim Belushi's kid? Or was it John Belushi's kid? I don't know, one of his kids.
Peter DeLuise.
I thought it was Belushi. Another fat guy. There we go. At 8 o'clock, Werewolf. At 8 o'clock was Werewolf. 8:30 was Married with Children. The episode was called Build a Better Mousetrap, and it did a 5-1 rating. At 9 o'clock was The Tracy Ullman Show, and at 9:30 was Duet. And, of course, we all know what show came from The Tracy Ullman Show. And that is, of course, the show that ended up becoming the backbone of the Fox network. And that, of course, was The Simpsons. So they go there. Before we continue, I wanted to just let everyone know what was at Long Island on this evening. 6,000 were in your house, Mr. D'Amato.
Welcome for the to your house.
Sting and Jimmy Garvin, who were subbing for the Rock and Roll Express, defeated the Sheepherders via DQ. Who were the Sheepherders? That was a dark match, by the way. The pay-per-view, JR and Bob Caudle on commentary. Tony Schiavone was the ring announcer. Nikita Koloff fought Bobby Eaton to a 20-minute draw for Nikita's TV title. Larry Zbyszko pinned Barry Windham to win the Western States Heritage Championship in 1916. Road Warrior Hawk beat Ric Flair by DQ at 22:40. Of course, Flair kept the world title. And Dusty Rhodes, who was your U.S. champion, won the $500,000 8-man bunkhouse stampede. In the match was the Barbarian, Arn and Tully, the tag team champions, Road Warrior Animal, Lex Luger, Ivan Koloff, The Warlord, and The Barbarian. So there you go. And Dusty Rhodes ended up winning the match. So, and you could, as you said, a popcorn fart in Nassau Coliseum. All right, JR, we have one movie. It's a pretty good one, though. Pretty good sequel. Came out on the previous Friday, and it was... Ready?
Radio Show Visual, the sequel.
No. That, please. That deserves its own show, its own report with nothing else. Braddock, Missing in Action 3.
Okay, hang on.
Well,
can you spell Braddock for me?
B-R-A-D-D-O-C-K.
Okay, that's what I had.
Braddock.
All right,
Chuck Norris. Chuck Norris.
All right, here we go. Colonel James Braddock, Vietnam War veteran, had believed his Asian wife, Lin Tan Kang, to be dead since the war ended in 1975. But he hears from missionary, Reverend Polanski, that he has her tied up in his basement. No, that Lin is not only alive, but that she and Braddock have a 12-year-old son named Van Tan Kang. At first, Braddock does not believe it when the cold-blooded CIA boss Little John D'Amato tells Braddock to disregard that information. That's when Braddock knows it's true. Braddock heads back to Vietnam through parachute deployment with the help of an Australian C-47 pilot. After parachute descent, Braddock outruns Vietnamese Navy patrol boats with a jet-powered speedboat and on into Chuck Norris things from there.
Yes. Those names don't sound Italian, Jesse.
Right.
Like some Van Pan Tang Parmesan, please. So anyway, that was the movie that came out on Friday. The NFL playoffs are in its bye week, and the following Sunday, January 31st, would be Super Bowl 22 from Jack Murphy Stadium in San Diego, California. Your teams, not sadly, Mr. D'Amato, your defending world champion New York Football Giants.
Yeah, I can't win it every year.
Can't win it every year. It was the NFC champion Washington Redskins against the AFC champion Denver Broncos, who made
back. That was a shitty strike season, right?
That was the strike season with the 3 weeks of scats. Yes, the Ernest Biner fumble in the AFC championship at Mile High got the Broncos championship, and it was the Redskins who beat. I think they beat Minnesota. Yeah, because Minnesota beat the Niners, who went 13-2 in the divisional playoffs, and the Redskins won the NFC championship. So the following week in San Diego would be Super Bowl 22. Let's take a look at the NBA games on this Sunday. There were five games, and the high scorer in the five games, a guy you know very well, Mr. D'Amato, because he wore your team's colors, the X-Man,
Xavier McDaniel. Yes.
Yes, sir. He had 35, but the Lakers still beat the Sonics in Seattle, 116-109. Actually, another guy had a good night at ex-Nick, Mr. D'Amato. Bernard King had 25 as the Bullets blew out the Sixers on this Sunday evening. Your AP Top 10 College Basketball poll, which would come out the next day, number one, Arizona, and then 2 through 10, Purdue, North Carolina, Duke, UNLV, Temple, BYU, last time they were in the top 10, Michigan, Kentucky, and Oklahoma. And finally, on the Frozen Pond on this evening, I think there was only four games, let's see, five games, the only PTB team in action was your Hartford Whalers. And they won in overtime, 2-1. They beat the Detroit Red Wings. A little grasping answer. Your division leaders, Red Wings lead the Norris. Calgary, Mr. Nelson's team leads the Smythe.
Please, Brass Bonanza's with D'Amato, get Roger to keep him awake around 5 a.m.
Somewhere in the backwoods of Annapolis, North Carolina. The Canadiens leading the Adams, and the Flyers were leading the Patrick. And sadly, Mr. D'Amato, the Rangers were in last place in midway through the 87-88 season. So, all right, there you go. And that is your pop culture report, JR. Back to Hamilton, Ontario.
As the Al Bundy song goes, welcome to my couch. All right. Well, Vince and Jesse talk about the rules of the Rumble, run down some participants, and that brings us to our first ever Royal Rumble, the main hook besides the contract signing here on tonight's USA Spectacular. And Howard Finkel's in the ring running down the rules, and Bret Hart and Tito Santana are waiting in the ring. No tease here. They're right out there waiting for you. as the first two entrants. Mm-hmm. Things get underway with Brett hammering away at Tito, slugging at him in the corner. We get more talk about the contract signing. Tito battles back, and things ebb and flow with some teased eliminations until Butch Reed shows up at three. Reed goes right at Tito and almost shoves him out of the ring, but Santana hangs on. We get some double teaming, but Tito fights through it and beats on both guys to a pop. The numbers game is eventually too much, and the double teams commence. Jim Neidhart's in at four, and Tito dodges Reed, who careens into Brett. Vin says this is a nightmare for Tito, as all three men batter him and shove him against the ropes, trying to push him out. Jake Roberts is in at five and saves Tito while also eliminating Reed to a big pop. Jake and Tito unload on the hearts as the crowd is going wild. Jake loads up the DDT on Brett, but Anvil cuts him down with a clothesline to block it, and Harley Race is out at six. He hits the ring as the hearts have fully taken control. Race goes right at Jake, and the numbers advantage is back in effect. Jim Brunzell is in at seven. He goes right at the hearts, ramming them together and trying to eliminate Brett. Jake almost has Race out as the match continues to develop. Jesse's really hyping the odds here in the heel versus face. So we haven't really heard much of the every man for himself thing. Like, Vince and Jesse, like, really beat you over the head with the, you know, who's friends and who's not, and here are the heels. Here, like, they're really hammering in the odds, whatever those heels outnumbering the faces or whatever in there. Sam Houston's in at eight and is red hot going after the anvil. The action's still pretty good here. Lots of strike and elimination attempts. The hearts finally dump Tito, who has a nice showing, going from number one almost through halfway. Danny Davis jogs out at nine and targets Houston when he arrives. They trade fists, with Houston winning the battle. Jake crushes Davis with a back suplex, and Danny begs off as the crowd's chanting for DDT. Davis sneaks free and runs across the ring. Brunzell is in trouble as Borzukov ambles out at 10. The ring is now filling up as we get more strikes and chokes and shoving into the ropes. Vince talks about Nikolai Volkov is dumb as Boris tries to push Houston out. Race works over Zukov, which shocks Jesse, who says the sides are crumbling. Jesse puts over Brett, still hanging in, as Davis cracks Houston with a dropkick. Nikolai and Don Morocco come out at 11, and they brawl until Morocco knocks Nikolai down and gets in the ring. Brunzell and Jake shove off Boris, ending his night as Nikolai watches at ringside. Brunzell crushes Hart with a nice dropkick, as Jesse name drops his buddy Barry Bloom. Nikolai finally slides in at 12, and he goes at Houston and helps Davis work him over. Morocco chucks Race, who does his big flip out to the floor. He's eliminated. Harley refuses to leave, though. He argues with the refs until Jim Duggan shows up at 13, and of course Harley cracks him and runs away. The crowd's all fired up for Hacksaw, but Jesse's less than thrilled. Duggan goes right at Anvil, battering him with hard right hands as the crowd cheers him on. Ron Bass is 14. We keep on going until Brian Blair's in at 15. The brawling and Mandarin continues until Hibbley Jim is in at 16. Brett's still going strong, amazingly enough, but his partner gets tossed by the hillbilly, ending a strong run of his own. 17 is Dino Bravo. He runs out along with that slop bucket Frenchie Martin. Houston gets shoved out by Bass, and we maintain a steady number in the ring. Ultimate Warrior is in at 18 to a big pop. He hits the ring. Bret Hart finally is eliminated by Don Morocco, and Jesse just gushes over the Hitman's showing here tonight, which was impressive. Gang chugs out at 19. He goes right at Jake, who's been in for a while, too. Blair gets dumped by the gang, and Gang follows by knocking Jake out as well, as making his presence known. JYD is in at 20 to close out the show. Close out the match. Here's our final field. That brings us to our final field. Duggan sends Nikolai flying as Gang eliminates Hibbley Jim. Jesse now picks Gang to win, and he certainly seems like a good pick. Warrior and Gang have a fun showdown as Duggan knocks Davis out of the ring. Gang then throws Warrior quietly, which is kind of surprising. That leaves us down to six. Jesse says he wishes Bruno was in this one to take a few lumps. Bass sneaks up and shoves out JYD, and then Morocco eliminates Bass as we're whittling down. Morocco nails Gang and Bravo with drop kicks, and then cracks Frenchie with 1-2, thankfully. Bravo holds up Morocco, and Gang charges them and knocks him out. Gang fires up, goes right at Gang. Duggan fires up, goes right at Gang, but that ends badly as he gets worked over for a bit by Gang and Bravo. Things turn quickly. Gang accidentally clotheslines Bravo out of the ring. Duggan then hammers away Gang, but Gang overwhelms him. Gang steps back and charges, but Duggan ducks, and Gang crashes to the floor, giving Hacksaw the win of the inaugural Royal Rumble. Fun match, a good intro to the gimmick, not much storyline advancement, not many big spots, but it told a very simple story, kept the crowd rocking. I thought it was a solid maiden voyage for a brand new concept. I thought Gang looked real strong, he was booked well, and I thought Duggan's a good choice too. He's super over and a good fit for this type of brawl. So I really enjoyed this match. It's quick-paced enough. It's a good taste of what's to come. Is it legendary? Is it super exciting? Is it big storylines? No, but it gets the concept over perfectly. I went 3 stars on this, John.
Yeah, this is a simple experiment. They don't want to do too many crazy spots, and as far as risks, as far as face, heel, and they just stuck to the basics. Very simple eliminations where a face eliminates a heel eliminates a face. Pretty much, they pretty much alternate a one face, one heel, and And they kept it easy to follow because this was the first time. But I got to praise Jesse. Jesse was amazing during this whole thing. And right away, he emphasizes that it's how the luck of the draw. Like, it doesn't matter like that these guys are banging it out in the first few minutes, because if you get number 19 or 20, it improves your chances. And also, he was like that spot where Morocco and Volkov were coming at the same time. And Morocco was playing a hero and fights off Volkov to get in there early. And Jesse's like, it's an advantage to get in there later. So he was just he was great pointing that. And of course, he's got to throw in some shots at Tito, saying that he got sick. He ate some rotten enchiladas when he was in the Navy in Tijuana.
That was a great line. That was awesome.
But overall, it was simple. Nothing exotic compared to the rumbles that we see nowadays with 30, 50 people. But it was just a basic solid way to get it over, and I would have liked to see maybe Jake win to get a monster push. But I guess Hacksaw was a good choice, and also you had mentioned, I was surprised that Warrior was like a non-entity, real quick in, and an easy elimination by Gang, and also Gang was very impressive. I think coming out of the strong was Gang and Hacksaw were the two that came out of this the strongest.
And I think Warrior looked pretty good. His elimination is quiet. I was surprised he didn't win because he's new. I guess Duggan's more established, and maybe they weren't sure what they had in Warrior yet. But this seems like something that he could have just came in and cleaned house and won because he was getting pretty big pops. They clearly liked him. I think he was starting to get his music around the time. So I think it was clear they had some thoughts for him. So I was a little bit surprised maybe that he wasn't in contention at the end.
Yeah, he wasn't. I don't really recall him eliminating too many people. They didn't really. It wasn't a strong performance from him. So, I guess his push will come later.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty basic, pretty standard.
He didn't have any eliminations at all, actually. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was built as a battle royal with just one guy at a time, rather than I don't think they were looking too far past any eccentricities or anything. I mean, Brett looked good. I mean, at least the one thing they did know what to do was to, have the athletic guys in early and the big fucking hosses late. I mean, they figured that out at least. Yeah, Jesse is on a roll with Tito, and he can go back to making bad tacos when he got thrown out of the ring. And the other one that was funny was at the end, and it was so me when Jesse goes, of all the guys to win this thing, him. That was great. Only because I agreed, but I am kind of surprised Warrior didn't win, but maybe they didn't know what they had yet, obviously they wanted a happy ending after Hogan got IKEA furniture thrown at him.
That's what we all want.
Yes, happy endings. Yeah, exactly.
That's match two.
Yes, that's a sushi placement.
No, that's an edit. Sorry.
No way. The edit's going to be when Vince says during this next match. But yeah, I mean, it was with the crowd wanted something to cheer, after Hogan got cheap furniture thrown at him. So having Duggan win was fine, I suppose. They did, the one storyline thing they did keep going with was the whole thing with him and Harley, the brawling in the aisle. They kept that going because that went from that came from the slammies when they were throwing fucking coleslaw at each other or whatever. So that they kept that up. But otherwise, you're right, JR. It was pretty much just a standard. They were experimenting with it. I'm sure, Pat was backstage kind of tinkering with it. Nikolai obviously missed his cue, that boob. Because I think that was a great audible by Morocco to kind of knock him out before. So he probably didn't know what the fuck he was doing. So Jim Duggan, believe it or not, the inaugural winner of the Royal Rumble. Little did we realize where this match would go down the line.
What do you guys think about Jake? I thought he got like the biggest pop going in.
Yes. Yes,
and maybe you could say that he doesn't need it; he's always going to be over. But I thought he could have got the WA.
Yeah, he's been pretty aimless. We talked about that recently. He hasn't had much going on.
Yeah.
I mean, him and Duggan are probably pretty much on the same spot at this point.
Yeah, the thing about Jake, it's funny you say that, John, because the thing about Jake is, don't forget, he was he was on and off TV pretty much from WrestleMania 3. So he probably could have used. It probably would have helped him to get the win here to kind of get him back on track.
My guess is they wanted it to be like a real. Like put over as like a brawler kind of thing, So like Duggan's more the street brawler, and he wins the Rumble match. So maybe more than having like a finesse guy win. And Brett looked good too. Brett was really good in there. They let him get a lot of shine running almost to the end.
Yeah, Jesse gave him a lot of praise for hanging in there.
Yes. No, I agree. I agree. yeah, so there we go. Jim Duggan is your inaugural Royal Rumble winner, JR.
All right. Here we go. Craig DeGeorge is at the podium with Hulk Hogan. He talks about the main event coming up, all the cheap shots and stunts that Ted DiBiase and Andre the Giant have been pulling. He says that Andre will have to beat every Hulkamaniac in the building to win that night. And that's that. And that brings us to our final match of the night. I think here just to pretty much eat up some TV time. And that is the Young Stallions taking on the Islanders. Another 2 out of 3 falls match, which they fucking love. This has much lesser stakes. Islanders jog out with Bobby Heenan as Vince talks about them dognapping Matilda, which Jesse doesn't buy. The Stallions hit the ring to close out the show for us. Powers and Tama open up. We get a lock up around some stalling. Powers hammers away and drives Tama out as Jesse says Bobby's in Barbados on vacation tonight, courtesy Ted DiBiase. Tama returns and Vince talks about everything that's gone down here this evening. Powers eats the buckles on a charge and Haku tags in and lands a hard chop. Powers escapes and tags Romo. We get some chatter about the weightlifting record from earlier. Jesse says the bar officially weighed out at 712 pounds and Vince trolls them some more about helping out. Haku and Roma go back and forth until Powers comes in and gets a near fall. Haku cuts Powers down and tags Tama, who slams him and misses an elbow drop. Jesse breaks down why the Islanders are successful as Haku comes in, lands a back elbow for two. They start to quick tag now and really work over Powers with hard strikes and headbutts. Jesse thinks the Stallions aren't quite championship level yet, while the Islanders are. Vince talks about Tama's toes and how he can hang them from the ropes. And Jesse actually calls him racist, which is fucking amazing. An amazing lack of self-awareness. Roma gets a tag and cuts Tama down with a clothesline as Jesse name drops Jimmy the Greek. Tama grabs Roma. Haku yanks down the top rope, causing Roma to land hard on the floor, injuring his leg. Roma rides on the floor as Powers checks on him, and Jesse rips Joey Morella for not counting. Morella finally starts to count. We get the count out for the end of the first fall. After a break, we find out the Stallions actually went back to the locker room so Roma could get checked out. And during that time, we revisit the contract signing. We go to the podium where Ted DiBiase and Andre the Giant talk to Craig DeGeorge, talk about the main event. And DiBiase made me laugh again. He references the solid oak table. Like, is this like a running joke that they kept talking about the fucking oak table?
The preschool table.
Like, yeah, seriously, like art class.
I think they both called it oak. Andre says he's still undefeated and will take the title back on February 5th. Or take the title for the first time on February 5th. The Stallions hobble back to the ring. We resume this match. This thing's all over the place. After a break, the ref forces Roma to start things since he lost the last fall. Roma's hurting and taped up, and Tama viciously goes to work on the knee. Roma escapes and tags Powers, who comes in hot, gets two on a backdrop. Haku comes in, and Powers is rattling him, keeping him off balance, getting near falls. Jesse explains Giant Mania as Powers gets a suplex for two. Tama eventually tags in and breaks down Powers to take over control. Haku tags back in and Powers gets a small package for two, but the Islanders maintain control. The crowd tries to rally Powers, but Haku mows him down with a great dropkick, and Powers dodges a Haku headbutt, but he can't make the tag. Jesse wonders why he's even bothering with Roma's condition. Powers lands a shot when Haku drops his head, but it just flops back on his back for some reason in a weird spot. Haku whiffs on a dropkick, which Powers also avoids awkwardly. Roma gets a tag, hobbles in, but Haku just kicks his leg and pounds the knee. And then Tama tags in and hits a splash off the top onto the leg and goes to the single crab for the win. I like the leg stuff. I thought it was kind of neat, but this just felt interminable. Just on and on and on and on and on and on. And just nobody cared. Vince and Jesse are talking about anything they possibly can besides this. Tough way to end the show, but the Islanders get a win. The Stallions are past the point of being in matches this longer competitive. I mean, they're just done. Unless they get some kind of hook or push, but as is, they're just cooked. I didn't mind the knee stuff, but interrupting the match, having them go to the back during a 2 out of 3, having DiBiase come out, like, all of it was just awkward. I went 2 stars because I liked the focus leg work, but most of all, it was just an interminable, long fucking affair. And this checked in at, 14:10, and it felt like 34 easily. So that's all I got on that one, Scott. What do you got to say?
Yeah, no, you're right. It didn't seem to end. But, yeah, the guy who compared Mr. T getting whipped to Kunta Kinte is telling Vince that his comparison of Samoan feet is racist. Yeah, that's great.
It was quite the statement. It was a ballsy statement by Jesse.
It was pretty ballsy. I agree. Yeah, the match is terrible. That was so weird that they went to, like, all right, well, this match is in halftime, let's go to the fucking podium for interviews. Stupidest thing ever. The Stallions had some odd Jimmy Hart. How long did they have that theme? Like, they
crank
had some
it
weird.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah. That was odd. I don't really remember that song. It's funny.
Yeah, they had it for a while, and then it kind of becomes a de facto, like, jobber theme for a bit. Like, Powers uses
it
as a single guy.
They played it at the end of when they won the Survivor Series. They played it.
Right. But
didn't
they say,
I don't remember.
I thought they said, didn't he? Wasn't the story or the gimmick that Jimmy wrote it for one of his teams and they took it? Didn't we read that somewhere?
Yes, yeah. I think we did read it, yeah.
Okay.
Remember in the Survivor Series when I pointed out how it was ironic that the team that won, they played the music by somebody from the losing side.
I know, yeah.
And then
yeah,
I'm pretty sure, like, right. Powers and even Jim Brunzell or whoever, like, I think we'll see it, I think, on a lot of MSG shows over the next couple of years. I feel like it becomes like a... It's kind of like a generic jobber theme for like house shows. Like I remember hearing it a bunch of the Dunk and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Just for random dudes. So it kind of becomes like the WCW's Hollywood Blonde song that they just use for like every fucking jobber that comes through. Like I think they use it. This is the same thing.
Yeah. But yeah, there's not much to say here. I gave it 2 stars. It was all right. It got a little lengthy, but the Islanders with the needed the win more obviously because the whole Matilda thing was firing along and they needed to keep that going. So. Yeah, that's all I got on that, John, except for the hypocrisy of Jesse, making it quite funny. So there you go. A win for the Islanders.
Yeah, it was a time and then I guess they left themselves too much time and they had to stretch it out and in doing that, they still put over the Islanders strong, giving them two falls, which was good. And the Stallions, they sold, but they put the Islanders over strong, but you guys didn't point out the best part of the was the in between interview when friggin Andre friggin chopped Craig DeGeorge. I said, "Don't touch up me." Chopped him right in the gut. And poor DeGeorge had the that poor bastard had to friggin finish the interview with holding like his stomach, man. And Andre was just going off. I mean, you could only understand like 1 out of 5 words, but he was just so great. Just the way that he makes that choking motion with his hands, but that was the highlight of it.
It is funny. It was pretty funny.
Don't turn up to me.
Don't turn up to me. All right, and I know Jesse and Vince do a little
wrap
little back
up
and forth.
They go on about the weightlifting and Hogan Andre and blah blah blah. So we're out. So all right, why don't we get to our awards here for the night? Overall, I thought it was a pretty good show. I enjoyed it. I thought the first Rumble match did a good job getting the point across. The end of card, hit or miss, but whatever. We were here for the contract signing. We were here for the weightlifting, of course. But, you know, for a free TV show, this more than delivered when you look at what the main goal was, and that was to hype up the main event in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, whatever it was. So,
right.
All right. Yep. Match of the night, I thought, obviously pretty easy for me. That was the Angels and the Glamour Girls.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yep.
The Cousin Junior for the shittiest match of the night, I went with Stallions Islanders, which, I mean, again, wasn't that bad, but it was just so long and boring. And of what we had, it was just the worst. So, again, we've had decent Cousin Junior sometimes. This is one of them, but it's clearly the worst match of the night.
Yeah, it was like a squash.
No, it definitely was. Yeah, it was.
All right. So next we have our Hogan Award on the MVP of the night. And I went with DiBiase and Andre. I thought they were the best on the evening. I loved them in the contract signing. I thought DiBiase really kept things churning when things slowed down a bit, when Andre was kind of perusing the contract and Hogan was glaring. Like, DiBiase just kept fucking ragging on everyone angrily. So I thought the two of their presence, and I love that interview at the end, too. So to me, they were the best on the night.
Yeah, they were awesome. They were so smug. They were really good. Andre has been, like, tremendous in this whole stretch. Just so smug. It's fantastic. I agree.
I'm going to go left a little and say Jesse. He really got over the Rumble, and he was on fire all night. He got over the basics of the Rumble, being that it was a new thing, and made it easy for the fans to follow. So I'm going with Jesse, and he busted Vince's balls all night. So
He did. He was really good tonight. He definitely.
I'm going to give it to Jesse. Yeah.
All right, the Uncle Elmer Award for the biggest loser. The worst worker of the night. I'm with Dino Bravo. He bored the fuck out of me in the weightlifting, and then he sucked in the ring in the Rumble. He's clearly the worst, one of the worst on the roster at this point. You know, Zukov is in contention here too, but he wasn't in the ring as long as Dino was. To me, Dino was the worst on this night.
Yeah, whereas Zukov is not as bad nearly as Dino. Yeah, Dino Bravo's bad. So is Frenchie.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Frenchie Martin.
Let's do both of them. How about both of them? The pair. They're both awful.
Yeah, they both suck. Yeah.
All right.
Stupid slack.
Best moment for me was Andre just being a fucking dick at the contract signing. I thought he was great.
Yes.
The whole time.
Don't turn up to me. You freaking the poor DeGeorge.
Yes. Yeah, all night. We'll just put it. Andre being an asshole all night. I thought that was clearly it for me. All right, the Juice Award, that is now known as the Morocco Award. We kind of had a, I don't know, we had some good contenders tonight. Hogan was fucking massive.
Yeah.
Bravo, yeah. Big as always. Morocco juiced. So I went with Hogan and Morocco in a tie. I thought they nudged out Bravo just a little bit on this evening. I mean, Hogan just busting out of that fucking outfit he was in.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hulk.
Yeah, Hulk. Definitely them. Yeah.
I'm going Dino, too, though. I mean, Morocco, too. To me, he's going to get it. He's going to be in there. He's just out of his
mind. He always
mind.
Does. I agree.
All right, and that brings us to the final grade out of 10 on the evening. Again, I thought it was a pretty good show. I enjoyed it. Definitely had some downtime, though, some lull. That last match was putting me to sleep. The weightlifting putting me to sleep. So I can't go too strong. The Rumble's fine, not great, but I went 5.5, which I think is pretty good for this show when there's really not much going on when you look at it besides the contract signing. So that's where I landed. What do you got, D'Amato?
6. Being that it was a freebie, it gets a little uptick that it's not a pay-per-view, so I'll give it a 6.
Scott?
I'll give it a 6 as well. It served its purpose. It was a good cable advertisement for the show on NBC in a couple weeks. I will say that. So, I liked everything about it. The Rumble was good. The interviews were good. That last match kind of lagged. Probably didn't even need it. But, 6 for me.
All right. So there you have it. Rumble 88 in the books. We'll be back next week. I believe probably Tuesday next week. We're off the Monday mm-hmm. night. We got some personal stuff going on here. So we'll be back on Tuesday. Sheriff Pete will be in the house as we look at the next night.
Yeah.
We look at the next night. January, we'll be loading the plate up as we look at the next night for the January 88 MSG House Show. Love having Pete on here with us. Always a good time.
Yes.
The savant.
I hope the Rougeaus are on the card.
The Ragus.
The Ragus.
Yes. So the sheriff will be in the house. Not to be confused with the cowboy. The sheriff will be here next Tuesday night, and then on from there. So, Scott, what do you got this week? Anything going on?
Well, of course, check out last week's main event where we recapped WrestleMania weekend. And, mm-hmm. This week will be the next installment of Nate's and my top 100 WWE wrestler list. And in 2 weeks will be episode 100 of the main event. So not sure what we're going to be doing yet, but should be very good.
D'Amato,
so.
Can you actually catch an invite this time?
D'Amato has been on in the past, as have you, but I thought maybe you guys were going to drive off to Cuba, so I wasn't sure if you were coming back.
maybe come on when we get the tag team rankings. I could come on and
absolutely. Yeah,
see where you have SD Jones and Andre, the great tag.
No, SD Jones and Tony. Oh, wait till I get Tony Gurria up there. Oh, that's going to be tremendous.
We actually learned a lot about Cuba on that ride, D'Amato, from that podcast we listened to.
Yeah.
More than I ever needed to know about Cuba.
Joey Diaz.
Yeah. Kept me up around 2 a.m. On the way down there. There you go. So I actually have a pretty busy week. We have this year tonight. I am slated to join Tim Capel and Jennifer Smith in a compliment of others on Talk and Pop this week as we recap WrestleMania weekend. I believe Todd and Nick possibly will be on there and others in and out. So we'll have that coming this week, I believe, if I make it, if I don't pass out. What else we got? There's rumblings, boys, of a Jeff
what
Rollins
wrestling. What happens in NOLA stays in NOLA, man, with all you friggin' chatterboxes.
Now it'll be talk about the wrestling. That's it. We get some first-timers in there, so we'll be – don't worry. We'll be
all right.
Okay. We'll be okay.
Don't give up that secret about the about the one with the Adam's apple. And just keep that in NOLA.
That's only one form of sausage on that show, John.
That stays on the couch with you. So So we'll be talking that. There are rumblings on the street of a potential Jeff Rollins wrestling return this week as well. So we'll see how that goes. And then a little something else in the hopper, too. So busy podcast week for us truly after a few weeks off. Back in the saddle, riding hard, riding dirty. So anyway, all right, that'll do it. Be sure to check out. You heard D'Amato reference the Tag Team GWE project. All the threads are posted for every nominated team on the Facebook page. If you went in on that, just let us know. We'll add you. And you can get in on the discussion. That will run through the end of the year. We'll be churning out pods before you know it, I'm sure. Some written pieces as well. Otherwise, check out all of our free Vintage Vault ebooks. Shop with us at PlayStation.com/Amazon, Twitter, Facebook, everywhere. We are there. So until next week, that's D'Amato. That's Scott. I'm out. We're out. See ya. Bye.
Good night, guys. I wish the Andre Doc would have showed that haircut match, you know? That's because Andre picked the worst partner of all time, man. SD Jones. That's why he got his haircut.
Imagine if he had AJ Styles as his partner.
Sorry, Scott. Sorry.
Oh, God. Who wants that hair? He should cut that hair.
I want it that way. Am I your
That way.